Hi, I'm Little Pooh. I live in your radio. This is my dog, Sugar Bear. He lives in here, too.
And I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time.
And I'm Pooh. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, my dear.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, over the years, we hear that things happen. We hear official explanations. We hear charges and countercharges. We hear the results of independent investigators and other independent investigators. And, of course, the Hegelian dialectic is always at work. Some are set to discredit others, and you never know what is the truth. Well, tonight, I'm not going to pretend, ladies and gentlemen, that I know the truth any more than anyone else, for the truth is at best elusive. This we have all discovered through the years. But tonight I'm going to ask some penetrating questions, and I'm going to tell you some findings that cannot be disputed. And you can make your own judgments and draw your own conclusions. But I will tell you this. After tonight's broadcast, you will have a much better picture of the truth of what really happened to Vince Foster. Ladies and gentlemen, many people have been combing through the evidence, the testimony, the documentation, all surrounding the death of Vince Foster. Was he really murdered in the park? Was he, as some say, murdered in the parking lot of the White House? Was he murdered somewhere else, rolled up in a rug, transported to the park and then dumped, body laid out, as if in a coffin? And if so, was it the work of the mysteries? For that is a classic, a classic symbol. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of questions and suspicious events, observations, and circumstances, every one of them, ladies and gentlemen, taken from the 2,726 pages of the 1994 Senate hearings and report volumes that cover the death of Vince Foster. And at the end of this broadcast, I'm going to tell you what you can do to receive a 160-page synopsis of this material put together by Stanford and MIT graduate Hugh Sprunt. I have nothing to do with this. I don't stand to make a penny. I'm interested, as always, in the truth. And what I'm going to give you tonight is going to set you on a straighter path than you've ever been set upon before regarding the death of Vince Foster. Ladies and gentlemen, most people live their lives because someone told them how to live it, or someone taught them what to do and what to believe and what to think and how to pray and what church to go to and what time to get up in the morning. And most people are convinced that they're not capable of achieving much in life. And so they don't really understand how to live their life. They get stuck and bogged down in meaningless tasks and repetitious performances, and their life becomes boring, and they become unhappy and tired. And the grass is always just a little greener on the other side of the fence. But the facts, ladies and gentlemen, that you need to know about how to make your life better is just very simply this. Make an honest and sincere search for the truth. Never stop and never settle for less. You'll find that the truth is so elusive and so difficult to find that it will be a major portion of your life. It will change your life. Your life will stop being boring. Your life will take on a new meaning. You will see that most of what you've been taught is absolute, complete, and utter bullshit. And the concept that you hold in your mind that you're not capable of achieving much more than you are achieving will disappear. You will become a better person. Your family will become a better family. You will become a mover and a shaker in your community. And because of that, your community will become a better place. And that will spread outward to the people that you touch, to your county and your state and your nation. I found that life, to be lived to its fullest, is a constant and unrelenting search for the truth. And I've come to believe that that's what life is all about. And that to have a rewarding life, you must set out on this path, upon this search, and you must never stop. Because you never stop discovering the truth, and it continues even unto death, where, of course, the final mystery is revealed. The final questions are answered, and the ultimate is achieved. And so I want you to pay very close attention to what you're going to hear about the death of Vince Foster tonight, because it's a process in the revelation of the truth. And you're going to hear a lot of things that you never thought of and never thought to ask, and that you were blatantly lied about by the press, by those in Washington, D.C., and even by the president and his wife. Which, of course, is nothing new. There were, ladies and gentlemen, no fingerprints on the gun that was found with which Vince Foster was supposed to have shot himself. No fingerprints on the gun. Did Vince Foster, in his death throes, take out his handkerchief and wipe the fingerprints clean and then neatly fold his handkerchief and put it back in his pocket? There's no proof that it was his gun at all. There were quite a few suspicious people seen in and around Vince Foster's car just before the body was found. There are many more witnesses to this incident than anybody has been willing to reveal to the public. Eyewitnesses saw the victim's briefcase in his car, yet the briefcase later vanished. So did the files index in his office. And the briefcase surfaced, of course, later in the investigation. If you'll remember, with the mysterious torn-up memo in the bottom. But eyewitnesses saw his briefcase in his car. All 35mm film of the crime scene, ladies and gentlemen, was either overexposed or it vanished. All of it, every bit of it. Most of the Polaroid photos of the crime scene have mysteriously disappeared. How does this happen? With supposedly competent police investigators shepherding this case. The independent investigator, Fisk, was forced to concede, ladies and gentlemen, that the victim's head had been moved after death had taken place and before his body was photographed. His car keys that he was supposed to have driven in to the park where he committed suicide were not found on Vince Foster. They were not found at the crime scene, nor were they to be found in his car, yet the conclusion immediately arrived at was suicide. He drove to this place in this park in Washington, D.C., in his automobile, parked his car, walked down, and shot himself in the head, yet no car keys were found on his body, anywhere on the crime scene, nor in his car. The very first non-official to see the body said there was no gun in sight at all, and so did the very first official person who arrived upon the scene and saw the body. No gun in sight at all. That's two different people who did not know each other. One, a non-official, just a person who came along, found the body, and then the first official person to arrive at the scene. Now, this man was said to have shot himself in the head, yet there was no blood splatter found, no large pool of blood, no brain fragments or skull fragments. He was supposedly shot with a high-velocity .38 caliber bullet through the mouth. Now, I have talked to many, many, many homicide investigators and emergency room doctors myself, personally. Every single one of them said that any wound to the head results in great loss of blood. That any wound caused by a high-velocity .38 caliber bullet would have caused blood to splatter and brain matter and bone material to splatter everywhere at the crime scene. They all told me that they have never found any instance where a bullet wound to the head did not display these characteristics at the scene, whether the person was shot by another or whether the person committed suicide and shot him or herself. Now, what's wrong with this, ladies and gentlemen? No bone fragments were found at the scene. No brain matter upon the ground. No large pool of blood. No blood splatter anywhere. Part of the victim's skull, ladies and gentlemen, was missing, according to the Fisk report. X-rays vanished with no explanation. Was it to conceal the fact that Foster had other head injuries besides that of a single bullet? Dr. Bayer, the examining physician, has a long history of mistaking homicide for suicide. In some instances, he stated x-rays had been taken. In other instances, he stated they had not. Is he suffering from Alzheimer's disease? Why the inconsistency? This man is supposed to be a professional. According to some reports, Foster's head wound is not consistent with a high-velocity .38 caliber bullet. Dr. Hawk's statement to the Federal Bureau of Investigation was that the exit hole was very small. In contradiction, the Fisk report says Dr. Hawk's observation was that the exit hole was very large. Yes. No, ladies and gentlemen, no fingerprints were found on the torn-up suicide note, but a palm print was. How can you tear up a piece of paper without leaving any fingerprints on it, even when the paper is receptive enough to take a very clear palm print? And no determination was ever made that it was Foster's palm print. The paramedics arrived at the scene to pick up the body and take it away. Stated very clearly in their report and in their testimony that a wound was seen on Foster's neck. One of the paramedics described it as a bullet hole. Both Dr. Hott and the paramedics said they viewed the body in a location that is 200 feet away from the site that is officially described as where the body was found and where the suicide actually was supposed to have taken place. Now, do you understand what I just said? The official report says that Vince Foster committed suicide and that his body was found a full 200 feet from the site where Dr. Hott and the paramedics said they viewed the body. The canon, ladies and gentlemen, where some witnesses say the body was found, has been completely removed from the park. A canon that had been there for years has been removed from the park shortly after Vince Foster's body was found. In his report, one of the paramedics listed the death as a homicide. A homicide. He said he listed it as a homicide because, in his experience dealing with dead bodies and removing dead bodies, he had never seen in his life a person who had committed suicide by placing the barrel of a gun in his mouth and blowing out the back of his head, arranged as if he had been placed in a coffin ready for his own funeral. The gun was lying neatly by his side. He said he had never seen anything like that before. The force of the blast usually causes the gun to be propelled several feet away from the person committing suicide. And the body usually goes through some preliminary convulsions before death actually occurs. He said he had never seen a head wound before in his entire career where there was no blood or brain matter or bone at the scene. For this reason, he listed the death as a homicide. Numerous hairs and carpet fibers covered Foster's clothing, but his car was never checked to see if any of the same fibers could be found on the driver's seat, as surely as there would have been found had he actually driven himself to Fort Marcy Park. Forensic experts say that this is the classic signature of a body that had been wrapped in a carpet. The whereabouts of Vince Foster in hours before his death remains to this day a mystery. No one knows, or no one will say. The list of items in his so-called suicide note could simply have been some reflection of his plans to resign his White House position, which his wife said he was seriously thinking of doing. And in fact, he had discussed it with her several times, and she had talked him out of it on each of those occasions. The last occasion, she has recently stated publicly, and it was published, that she asked him to sit down and make a list. Is this the list? Only two bullets were found in the pistol. No matching bullets were to be found in his home or his car. Vince Foster planned to give his visiting sister a tour of the White House the following day. Now, if I were going to commit suicide, would I invite my sister to tour my place of work? I don't know what Vince Foster would have done, but I certainly would not have done that. Vince Foster's friend and attorney, Jim Lyons, was coming from Colorado to meet with him also the next day after his death. Foster had a full lunch before leaving to supposedly kill himself. Not a partial lunch, not just a couple of bites, but a full lunch. Does this sound like he was depressed or worried or was going to kill himself? Why would a man who was going to commit suicide eat a full lunch? He was jovial, ladies and gentlemen, and he told his staff he would be back later in the day. He was joking. He was happy. He went and had a full lunch. In spite of an exhaustive search, no bullet was ever found which matched the cartridge in the revolver that was reportedly found at the scene. No bullet was found in his head. No bullet was found on the ground. No bullet was found anywhere. Period. The attitude of the body, ladies and gentlemen, was not consistent with suicide. It was laid out straight with his arms neatly at his side as if he had been laid out in his own casket. Feet straight out, legs together. No one heard a shot. No one in the park, no one in the vicinity, anywhere heard a shot. Now, I don't know about you, but I've fired 38 caliber pistols quite a few times in my life. And anyone within at least a two-block area would have heard the shot had one been fired. Few people in the surrounding area, folks, were even asked. The closest house, which was under construction at the time, was only 400 feet away. There were workers there. Now, this occurred on federal territory in Washington, D.C., and the Federal Bureau of Investigation was kept out of the initial investigation, was not allowed to participate. What's going on here? I hope you understand that I am far, far from finished with this, and I have already given you enough information that anyone with half a brain should know that Vince Foster was murdered. The lead investigator assigned to go to the body site was performing his very first homicide investigation on a man who was an important member of the staff of the President of the United States of America. Vince Foster's appointment book has never, ever been found. What's going on here? Wake up. I want to tell you about our sponsors at Swiss America Trading. Everybody listening to this broadcast, I assume to be concerned about the state of our affairs in this nation and in the world. I assume that you're concerned about your family, your loved ones. I believe within my heart that you care about all the things that you've worked for all of your life. And I think that you would be terribly injured should you lose a major portion or all of your assets. If you're like most Americans, you're hocked up to your eyebrows, and if you sold everything that you truly own, you would probably have about $2,500 in cash, and the rest you would have to give to the banks or the lending companies. Which loaned you the money to have most of what you think that you own right now. Now, if that's truly the case, ladies and gentlemen, if anything happens to the economy, if the dollar continues, as it always has since we went off the real money standard, you're going to be in terrible trouble. And if there is an economic collapse, which has been predicted by every major economic expert in this country, you're going to be in a ditch with nothing, with absolutely nothing. Now, let me give you a little scenario, and I hope you're listening very carefully, because it's so important that you pay attention. if I wished to bring about a system of total control of a population of people, and I had the power to manipulate the money supply to where the people were not dealing with real money anymore, and if I could get them to accept something that was worthless in place of that money over a period of time, if I could expand my base of control, which is called government, so that most of the people in the nation were dependent in some way upon that government and upon lending institutions, if I could convince them that it is not worth their time to save their money until they have the money they need to purchase what they want, but instead to go into hock for everything with credit cards and consumer loans and mortgages and loans on your cars and your furniture and everything else so that you really own nothing, then a very quick and sure path to enslave those people would be to pull the rug out from under the worthless paper that they have been taught to think is money. Bring the market down around their ears. These people who are so dependent upon the government and so in hock would then literally have nothing. In fact, many would have less than nothing. And no matter what they sold or what they allowed to be repossessed, they would still owe money. In order to solve their problem of housing, shelter, their problem of how to get food, their problem of the lack of security that would ensue when poor people turn against each other, and yes, folks, even kill for a can of peas, I could offer them a Messiah, a charismatic religious and political leader who could then offer them the solution to all of their problems. And it wouldn't take very long before an entire nation of sheeple would be on their knees begging me to implement that solution. This is exactly what happened in Germany in the 1930s and what brought Hitler to power. And this is exactly what's going to happen in this country. Now, if you want to make sure that you're not one of the sheeple who have to get down on your knees and beg for a solution that will enslave you, call our sponsor, Swiss America Trading, and do it now. The number is 1-800-289-2646. And if you don't believe that this can happen here, read the history of pre-Nazi Germany up until the date that World War II began, and take a look around and you'll see that the same thing is not only threatening to happen in this country, but is well on its way. It is in the process as I speak. 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-BUY-COIN. Get your hands on some real money and save yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, Vince Foster had been making overnight trips to Switzerland. He would go one day and come back the next to Switzerland. Overnight. And his wife
didn't know about these trips. Indications are that he had a Swiss bank account, which had been mysteriously emptied of $2.7 million a week before he died. His last planned trip to Switzerland had, for reasons unknown, been canceled. This is on the record. Just a few days ago, his wife published in a story, in an interview, the fact that she denied this. But this is in the record. The plane tickets, the reservations, the trips are recorded in the record. Maybe she doesn't want to acknowledge it. Maybe she's been debriefed. Maybe she's been paid off. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe in her grief, she just doesn't want to deal with it and wants to get it behind her. Much like Jacqueline Kennedy did. Foster had, until coming to Washington, been employed as a $300,000 a year lawyer. His house in Washington was not especially impressive, yet in the last weeks before his death, he had a chronically overdrawn checking account. What's the story here? Where did his money go? There's no record that he spent it or fiddled it away. The police, ladies and gentlemen, were prevented from searching the victim's home and his office. Prevented. Vince Foster's widow was not interviewed for 10 days after his death. Apparently, she was shown a gun, silver in color, that was identified as the weapon used. She said it looked like the silver-colored revolver she had previously seen at home. Now, let me tell you this again, so there's no mistake. I don't want any mistake in your mind. No misconception, no misunderstanding. For this is important. Vince Foster's wife, his widow, was shown a gun which was silver in color. It was identified to her as the weapon that Vince Foster used to kill himself. She told the police that it looked like the silver-colored revolver. This is her own words. This is a quote, silver-colored revolver, end quote, that she had previously seen at home. And yet, the photograph, ladies and gentlemen, of the body with the gun clearly shows a black gun. Clearly, not silver, not silver-like, not light-colored, but black. This photograph was published, and it was shown on television by ABC. No proof exists that the gun found with Vince Foster ever fired that shot that supposedly killed him. And remember, no bullet was ever found. The photographs and reports in the possession of the Park Police and the Federal Bureau of Investigation are being kept from the public view. And if he committed suicide, there is no reason, and this is exactly what happened to the Zapruder film in 1963, it wasn't until I had to search out a corrupt official in the government and pay that person $16,000 before I could get my hands on a good, clear color copy of the original Zapruder film on 35 millimeter with all the frames intact. Are we going to have to wait an equivalent amount of time and spend an equivalent amount of money, or frauds as we call them, to get these photos? The Fisk Report, the so-called Fisk Report, contains numerous factual errors regarding time and geography at the crime scene. It reports a large pool of blood under Foster's head, even though no one who was at the site made any such report. In fact, all of those who viewed the body, including Dr. Haught and Corey Ashford and the paramedics, specifically stated to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Park Police that there was no blood on the ground or anywhere around the body or on the scene, period. And Ashford is one of the medical technicians who helped pick Foster's body up to remove it from the scene. And that is one of the reasons why in the report he stated that it was a homicide. One vehicle, ladies and gentlemen, seen at the park by police and rescue eyewitnesses, is ignored in the official record of the case. The park police, who have no homicide bureau, park police, concluded their investigation before they sent the gun for testing to see if it even could fire. Does this sound like the Keystone Cops? Well, it is. What are park police doing investigating a homicide, ladies and gentlemen? Why was the FBI told to butt out? What we're learning about the FBI these days, we wouldn't have been able to believe them either. And can't, as a matter of fact, because eventually, after 10 days, they came in on the case, and they're hiding everything. Why are they hiding evidence of a suicide? Why are they hiding photographs of a suicide? Is it because they don't want anyone to know that it really wasn't a suicide, but a murder? The death, ladies and gentlemen, was ruled a suicide before the investigators even viewed the body. Hello? Did you hear what I said? Is anybody home? The investigators ruled that this was a suicide before they even saw the body. The crime scene was never secured. There are access roads near the body site in the opposite direction from the parking lot where Foster's car was found. Access to the body from these roads was never blocked off in any way. People came and went. And get this. This is an anomaly par excellence. No damage whatsoever to Vince Foster's teeth from the recoil of the .38 caliber pistol allegedly placed in his mouth could be found. And this particular pistol has a rather substantial steel forward sight or aiming device mounted at the top of the end of the 4-inch barrel. There is absolute insane differences, ladies and gentlemen. Wildly conflicting testimony regarding the time at which the victim was identified. There's no evidence, ladies and gentlemen, to support the Fisk report that the victim had lost weight. The only evidence is that he had gained weight. There's conflicting testimony as to when the White House was told of the death. And get this, folks, from as early as 6 p.m., according to the initial report from Chelsea's nanny, to the official time of 8:30 p.m. The phone number of a Secret Service officer was found in the notebook of Park Police Investigator Rolla. Immediately following this entry was the address and phone number of Vince Foster. When asked about this during his deposition, the record shows that Rolla got extremely nervous and frustrated. Why? Eyewitness testimony is in wide disagreement as to whether the victim's car was initially found locked. Some say it was locked, but the car keys were found much later, at the morgue, in a front pocket that had already been searched at the scene, with the result that there were no car keys on the body, on the scene, or in the car. But later in the morgue, they mysteriously turn up in a pocket that had already been searched. Now, if the car was locked at the scene, how was his car opened up? Because some say it was locked. Yet we know through testimony that the car was opened and searched. Do you understand what I'm saying, folks? Because of interference with the prosecutor Rodriguez's inquiry into this case, he resigned in protest. He resigned in protest because people were interfering with his investigation. Marcia Scott met with Foster. He was her friend of 20 years, and she met with him in an unusual 1 to 2 hour closed-door meeting the day before he died. Now, after Foster died, the only thing Ms. Scott said she could remember discussing from this 1 to 2 hour long meeting was that Foster had a good weekend. The ABC News photo published showing Foster's hand with the gun is not consistent with eyewitness accounts of the scene who say the gun was not in his hand when the body was found. Vince Foster's office, a secondary crime scene, was immediately cleansed of evidence and documents by Clinton administration officials. One official stated that he was sent to Vince Foster's office by Hillary Clinton to retrieve certain documents, which he took and handed to her. The victim's personal effects, including his pager, were returned to the White House within 24 hours before they could be analyzed by the police. And so they never were. Certain White House personnel whose names are, for reasons unknown, not in the official record, but it clearly says that they were prepared to break into Park Police Officer Rolla's desk drawer to obtain a key to the evidence locker where Foster's possessions were being kept. See page 91 of Hugh Spunt's report, babe. be prepared. The neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen, around the crime scene at Fort Marcy Park was not canvassed by police to see if anyone had heard a shot until 2 years after the shooting took place. Can you imagine that type of incompetence? There were several police officers in Arkansas. Two of them on duty at the governor's mansion have given sworn depositions that they were told of Foster's death by phone at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But, ladies and gentlemen, this would be before police and rescue workers even arrived at Fort Marcy Park. One of these officers immediately informed the governor's wife more than an hour before White House personnel say they found out about Foster's death. What's going on here? It is unclear when and where the victim's car keys were actually found. One rescue worker says they were found on the way to the morgue. Another says they were found at the morgue. Police and rescue workers have been forbidden to discuss the case. Suicide? Forbidden to discuss the case? No mention, ladies and gentlemen, has ever been made as to whether there were powder burns inside of Foster's mouth and whether they were consistent with the bullet and spent shell found in the gun at the scene. Remember, there was no bullet found that was fired. Shortly before his death, Foster asked his executive assistant to put a 2-inch thick ring binders, that's 2-inch thick ring binders, from the National Security Agency into Bernie Nussbaum's safe. However, Foster did not have the security clearance necessary for possession of these binders. In fact, one of the biggest problems with the Clinton administration is that most of his appointees and staff members are not capable of ever having a security clearance due to incidents in their background and due to the fact that most of them admit to having taken quite a few drugs during certain periods in their life. Foster's assistant revealed under oath in an interview by Senate Banking Committee investigators that she had placed these binders in the safe after Foster gave them to her with this request. No follow-up questions were asked, and no mention was made of any of this in the public hearings which followed, and no one asked what Foster was doing with binders classified above his ability to be in possession of the binders. Why not? The gun found at Fort Marcy Park was composed of parts from 2 different guns, and the serial numbers had been ground off both parts. Any police officer or mafia don can tell you that that's a throwaway. That's what they call a throwdown. Lisa Foster was given more than $250,000 just prior to her husband's death. It was channeled to her, ladies and gentlemen, via Vince Foster's sister, who works at the Department of Justice. Was this the payoff? Was this hush money? Are, as we revealed in Veritas in issue number 6, the current issue, was this a cash award for some service that she or Vince Foster had performed for the Justice Department? And ladies and gentlemen, Webb Hubble, in his testimony to the recent Whitewater hearings, when describing his actions following the notification of Foster's death, is reported to have said, quote, "We searched for Vince Foster's gun in his house End quote. Could Webb Hubble have taken the silver-colored gun from Foster's house so that the FBI could later show Lisa Foster the, quote, suicide weapon, end quote? This is just a taste, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to have a copy of the 160-page synopsis of this material put together by Stanford and MIT graduate Hugh Sprunt, of the 2,726 pages of the 1994 Senate hearings and report volumes that cover the death of Vince Foster, call this number tomorrow. Area code 301-864-6882. That's area code 301-864-6882. If you didn't get that number tonight, order the tape, ladies and gentlemen, and help us continue to make these broadcasts. Good night, and God bless you all, and God save the Republic.